As you said, I think just hydration in and of itself helps for nausea. The first-line treatment is scopolamine patch just behind the ear every 3 days. That significantly helps. And then you can go on to other means. In patients with continued nausea and specifically vomiting, there's one deficiency that's very important. And actually, it's the only real emergency in our obesity medicine or nutrition is thiamine deficiency. Thiamine deficiency can occur in anybody with a gastrectomy or partial gastrectomy because B1 or thiamine is not absorbed. It's exacerbated by nausea and vomiting, so it decreases even more. Then when they come into the hospital, they're given D5 half-normal saline. The increase in dextrose also decreases thiamine even further. So they can get nystagmus, they can get ataxia, and people often think that it's B12 deficiency, but B12 deficiency takes months to occur. The big thing is thiamine deficiency, and the Wernicke's encephalopathy can progress to pontine strokes, and that's irreversible. So anybody that comes in with nausea and vomiting, before you do anything, they really deserve a banana bag with thiamine in it and also some other vitamins and minerals. That will really take away the symptoms very quickly, but you do have to continue the supplement for about 7 to 10 days on a daily basis and then go weekly and then monthly. But I've seen it turn around very quickly. I've also seen it not been recognized and have a very bad outcome. So whenever you think of it, give thiamine because it's not B12 and it won't hurt you. It's a water-soluble vitamin. They'll just void it out if they don't need it. So going now from nausea to diarrhea, diarrhea is also not uncommon, but with the gastric bypass, as I said, there's only 150 centimeters bypass. It's not like the duodenal switch, which is a malabsorptive procedure primarily. So diarrhea is really not that common. Most commonly is constipation with the protein that's given. But do you want to talk about some of the different types of workup for diarrhea in a patient afterwards, what possibilities it could be?
Sure. So after surgery, the first possibility to look into is certainly dietary non-compliance. A large ingestion of fat or sugar into the jejunum will typically cause diarrhea. We call that a dumping syndrome, which actually acts as a negative feedback
they
for
spend
patients.
A lot of money for that
yeah.
dumping syndrome.
Absolutely, absolutely. So. The other thing I think we need to keep in mind is these patients were hospitalized, so we need to rule out a C. diff infection
yeah,
as well.
Point. Yeah, the dumping syndrome is, I think, very important because any type of carbohydrate, or specifically sweets and simple sugars, the jejunum that's brought up is not used to digesting those. So they get, tachycardic, they sweat, they get nauseous, and it's a really good negative reinforcement that they shouldn't be eating that. The problem is, like with any short bowel syndrome, your bowel will adapt. Mm-hmm. So if they keep taxing it, they may come back and say, oh, I can eat anything now. That's not the best thing because, as I said, part is the restrictive part, but the malabsorptive part is the dumping syndrome. So the other thing is that you talked about that occult sugar that they're not they don't know that they're taking in.
Yeah.
We had, in the beginning, we used liquid Tylenol, and liquid Tylenol has a lot of sugar in it.
Mm-hmm.
So now we use sugar-free liquid Tylenol because they were saying that they got. So you just want to look very closely at medication history if there's any sugar that they don't know about. So,
can I say, too, Dr. Still, that sometimes, too, the protein shakes, they commonly think that Ensure Boost, just any old shake, will work. And of course, the protein drinks need to be low sugar, so
yeah,
sometimes
very good point.
We get that. We
very
educate them, but sometimes they have some
whatever's on sale, you know, they go yeah,
or something.
Very good
yeah.
point. So we also do a lot with what we call metabolic management. You know, what do we do with the medications after surgery? We talked about that the significant improvement in insulin sensitivity. You know, their blood pressure, blood sugar. And cholesterol gets better. So what are some things we do for quote-unquote metabolic management?
So for patients with diabetes, because of that very rapid normalization or improvement in blood sugars, we are typically able to send patients home off of their oral anti-diabetic medications and just on Accuchecks and sliding scale. Now, if they're on a very large dose of insulin, they may need a small amount of insulin, at least in the first few weeks after surgery, so we'll adjust that as necessary. But definitely their insulin requirement decreases dramatically.
I mean, we've had patients come in with 100 units twice a day of insulin and go home just on sliding scale, as you said.
Yeah.
So you really want to be cognizant of that and decrease the longer-acting oral medications. Yes. How about with antihypertensive medications?
Those, again, depending on what their blood pressure is running in the hospital, we can typically maybe cut their dose in half and continue to watch the blood pressure at their follow-up visits.
One thing, too, a lot of these patients are on diuretics,
yes.
and we want to push the fluid,
yes.
so it's important to try to hold the diuretics
those.
If mm-hmm. possible. And the other thing is with the lipid medications, mm-hmm. we used to start them right after, but there again, we've learned over the time that it increases the risk of nausea.
Right.
The other thing is with rapid weight loss, you can get an elevation in LFTs, steatosis, just with any type of rapid weight loss. So what can compound that is the cholesterol medications, mm-hmm. the statins. So mm-hmm. it's a good idea, in our opinion, my opinion, to hold that for a couple months, recheck a lipid profile, mm-hmm. and see if they still need it. The other thing is, there's the malabsorptive component. We really don't know about the absorption. Mm-hmm. So, we recommend to go back to the regular release. So if there's been an extended release, we need to get the regular release. And also something that will increase the absorption is in crushed or liquid form, especially in the first 2 weeks. Then they can go back to cutting the tablet in half because that will just increase the surface area for absorption. But we really don't know what the absorption of a lot of these medications are. There's been a paucity of studies looking at antibiotics, peak levels after they take antibiotics. But for a vast amount of medications, we just don't know. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to be cognizant of that and use other measures when possible. So tolerance, as I said, can be improved with crushing and the liquid form. Pregnancy after bariatric surgery. We don't recommend getting pregnant for a year after surgery. But with the improvement in insulin sensitivity, a lot of these patients can't get pregnant because of polycystic ovarian syndrome. So life happens, as I said. We can only do so much. So one thing with regards to oral contraceptive, we recommend the barrier method because of what we just said. We just don't know the absorption of the pills. But if, from a nutritional standpoint, Tasha, if someone does become pregnant, are there any extra means that we need to take into account in these patients?
What we generally do is we bring them in monthly for monthly B12 injections as opposed to the every 3 month schedule. They're usually followed by high-risk OB. They monitor the baby's growth and development. So, if there's any concerns, they might contact us, and we might be more aggressive with nutrition. But I often get a diet history, see what they're eating. Hopefully, ideally, it would be balanced meals and good food choices, but the emphasis would be on protein. Closer to 80 to 90 grams of protein per day would be the recommendation. And just making sure that they're compliant with their vitamins.
Yeah, that's key. The good news is in the last 5 or 6 years, I think we've had 12 patients, and we do about 500 cases a year. So in the last 5 years, we've had 12 patients that have gotten pregnant in the first year. Knock on wood, they've all done very well. So, just keeping a good eye on them, the baby's healthy, and there's good growth. So, so good communications with the high-risk OB is also very important. So other chronic surgical complications that can occur, even with the surgery being a success, are some ulcers, some strictures of the anastomosis. What predisposes these individuals to ulcers and strictures?
The two biggest things, smoking and use of non-steroidal medication.
Yep.
So those are definitely things that we really counsel patients to
Yeah, and in fact, in our program, in addition to having them lose some weight to get them metabolically and metabolic fitness, better metabolic fitness, we also have them stop smoking because clearly smoking and, as you said, non-steroidals significantly increase the risk of ulcer and strictures postoperatively. Very, very important. The good news is by just stopping the smoking or stopping the non-steroidal and putting them on a PPI, those go away, usually. Sometimes they need a dilatation from endoscopy. Very rarely do they need to go back for surgery for revisions. So finally, if we talk about the nutritional deficiencies can occur, because I said at the time of surgery, specifically the bypass, which the majority of patients get, we bypass the majority of the stomach and the first part of the small intestine. Do you want to talk about the deficiencies and how we recommend treating them?
Sure. So with bypassing the proximal portion of the small bowel, and with less stomach acid, a lot of the well, not a lot, vitamins and minerals, primarily folate, B12, iron, and calcium absorption is impaired. So we routinely check labs and supplement. We follow a protocol. We recommend that the patients get children's chewable multivitamin twice a day, and also they take calcium citrate, which I think we're going to talk about in a little bit. But mm-hmm. those are the main things. The deficiency occurrences, about 47% of patients become iron deficient, 40% incidence of B12, and about 18% incidence of folate deficiency. But most often we get good results if the patients are compliant.
Just compliance is the key
because they often forget the evening dose or they just aren't taking what they're supposed to be taking.
And how about in menstruating females? You know, is the multiple vitamin with iron enough, or do you recommend Vitron C or ferrous sulfate with in addition to that?
Usually the children's chewable has 18 milligrams per tablet, so it is often sufficient, but in some cases when we check the CBC and get the serum iron levels, they come back low, then we might need to add additional iron, Vitron C.
As you talked about from the physiologic standpoint, you know, the intolerances after surgery, at least in the beginning, are meat and dairy products, right. And those were iron and the calcium. The other thing is the lack of intrinsic factor. Mm-hmm. You remember B12 needs to be bound to intrinsic factor, and intrinsic factors produced in the gastric, in the stomach, and then absorbed in the terminal ileum down below. That's not there, so we recommend subcutaneous, IM shots of B12 every 3 months. And we do that so we don't check serum levels, we just give it. Mm-hmm. If you take PO, you should take sublingual, and you need to check serum levels of B12 to make sure you're adequately being supplemented.
I think it's also important to just comment on the formulation of calcium. As you mentioned, the amount of stomach acid in the pouch is quite low, and calcium is available as calcium citrate and calcium carbonate. Calcium carbonate requires a very high acidic environment to be absorbed, so we recommend that patients take a calcium citrate that includes vitamin D, since that will be better absorbed in the low acidic environment of their pouch.
Good point. And actually, anybody that's on a proton pump inhibitor, mm-hmm. which blocks parietal cells, should mm-hmm. be on the calcium salt of calcium citrate, because you're right, it's about 40% increase in absorption. So after surgery, we send them home. We want them on the nutritional supplements, and people think, oh, it's a whole host of them, and it's not, as you said, it's not all that many. So they need to be on a chewable vitamin we use for about 3 months, and then transition to a regular one a day. I think, remember, cutting it in half will increase the absorption. The other thing is the B12 injections, as we talked about, every 3 months or sublingual every day. But if you do sublingual, you need to check serum levels of B12. Calcium in the form of calcium citrate, 1,500 milligrams in divided doses. And lastly, iron if they're menstruating or if their iron level remains low. So that's really all they need to be on. Now, the malabsorptive procedure, the duodenal switch, that's more of a malabsorptive. They may need some fat-soluble vitamins, but the majority of patients will do just fine with just that simple regime. But as you said, compliance is key,
compliance is key that they
do that.
Lap band surgery, too, I guess we should mention that they require just a multivitamin.
Just a multivitamin,
and
right.
Any type of calcium supplementation.
Jamie, as you talked about, avoiding all aspirin and non-steroidal mm-hmm. products, that's very important. A lot of these patients have a lot of DJD, that they're on a lot of aspirin and ibuprofen products preoperatively. They need to avoid that to reduce the risk of strictures, ulcers, and bleeding. So the recommended postoperative lab screening is pretty simple compared to what we talked about with the supplements and also their disease-specific serology. So we want to do a CBC, ferritin and iron levels we talked about, a parathyroid hormone or PTH, not only preoperatively, but about 6 months and then every year, at least every year, if they're normal. We also talked about the importance of 25-hydroxyvitamin D because of 30 to 40% of patients are vitamin D deficient preoperatively, significant will become vitamin D deficient postoperatively. So that's very, very important, especially in the younger females that we're operating on. A1C in diabetics and lipids, if they have a history of high cholesterol, you want to check that at about 3 to 6 months. If their lipid profile is reasonable, you don't really need to restart the statin or the cholesterol medication. There is some secondary benefits, though, from a heart protective of heart attacks and cardiovascular of primary prevention using the statins, not so much for cholesterol, but just for primary prevention of heart attacks and heart problems. So zinc also is important, especially in more of the malabsorptive procedures, folic acid, and you want to check comprehensive metabolic panel specifically for the liver function test, because as I said earlier, as we lose weight specifically quickly, you can get an elevation in liver function studies. So those are the recommended postoperative laboratory studies. So in conclusion, as I asked before, why would you consider bariatric surgery? Clearly, this is not a cosmetic procedure, and as we've talked about many times, it's to cure or to improve the comorbid medical problems. I specifically didn't talk about a lot of studies through these lectures or presentations, but I just want to refer to one. This was a great meta-analysis published in 2004, and this looked at over 22,000 bariatric surgery patients, and they looked at the not only the weight loss, which is important, but they looked at the resolution of the comorbid medical problems. So in this study, they looked at, you can see the excess weight loss of all patients was about 61% of excess body weight. So if Mrs. Jones weighed 200 pounds and she should weigh 100 pounds, she had 100 pounds of excess body weight. So in this example, she'd lose about 61% in all patients. If you look at the gastric bypass, it's about 60 to 70% overall, so about 60 to 70 pounds in that example. You can see the more malabsorptive procedures, the pancreoduodenal switch is the more malabsorptive that produces more weight loss. The mortality rates, as we talked about, is quite low, specifically done in a center of excellence where they're doing a high volume of bariatric surgery. It was just published recently that in a center of excellence, the mortality rate is about 0.4%. So that's pretty good. But there again, that's done in a high volume institution. The big money slide, as I said, is the comorbid medical problems, and specifically diabetes. There was a 76% resolution in diabetes. There was a 70% resolution in hyperlipidemia and about a 61% decrease in hypertension. And finally, obstructive sleep apnea, 85%. So clearly, it's one procedure can have a significant amount of improvement. And as I said, the weight loss is actually secondary to those comorbid medical problems. So as I talked about before, the mortality rate, any surgery, any modality, taking medication, putting in an IV, doing anything has risk. So you always want to weigh the risk-benefit. I think it's hard because there's really no age criteria now in bariatric surgery. It used to be 60, and then they went up to 65, and now there's really no age criteria. So, you know, at our institution, we get 60, 70-year-old individuals that we have to weigh the risk-benefit. But this is some mortality rates done used in context with other surgeries, and this is done in a center of excellence for bariatric surgery. As I said, it's about 0.4%. In contrast to heart surgery or CABG, which is about 2%, and a gallbladder cholecystectomy is 0.2%. So it's not without risk, but clearly I think with the resolution of the comorbid medical problems, it can be a very effective tool. And what if you don't do anything? This is a nice study by Christo in Canada, and it looked at individuals that underwent bariatric surgery, and it also looked at people that didn't. And you can see the patients that underwent bariatric surgery, after 10 years, there was a 0.6% mortality rate, and that included the 0.4% of the surgery itself. In comparison of equal patients that didn't go on to surgery, just quote-unquote medical management, there was a 6.1% mortality. So I am not saying, and we're not saying the surgery is for everybody, but clearly, if their body mass index is greater than 35, with diabetes or sleep apnea, or a body mass index greater than 40 alone, then bariatric surgery may be a potential modality to treat not only the weight, but the whole history of comorbid medical problems. Another thing that has gotten a lot of press is weight regain. As we talked about earlier, it's not uncommon for patients to have about a 10% weight regain. But unfortunately, there's a lot of patients that can increase more, 20, 30%. So I think having a comprehensive program, such as the Back on Track classes that we have, such as the integrated health with behavioral health and the psychologist, working with you and the dietitians and the exercise physiology, that'll give the best chance for most success to decrease this post-op weight gain. So in conclusion, I think bariatric surgery is a highly effective treatment for morbid obesity and its comorbid medical problems. Definitely compared to medical management, I mean, we can lose weight with medical management, diet and exercise, behavior modification, plus or minus pharmacotherapy, but we just can't keep it off. This is really a long-term effective treatment for morbid obesity, its comorbid medical problem. I think to ensure the best outcomes, they should be done in a comprehensive program, specifically a center of excellence, as we talked about. And the bariatric surgery is a key for a spectrum of treatments. It should not just be a standalone. With that, I would like to thank you both very much for participating. I thought it was very informative, and I hope that you felt that way too. Thank you very much for your attention. If we can be of any help with any of your patients that are struggling with the disease of obesity, we'd welcome the opportunity to help. Thank you very much, and have a nice day.